Welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. My guest today is Dr. Christopher Winter, who has practiced sleep medicine and neurology in Charlottesville, Virginia since 2004, but has been involved with sleep medicine and sleep research since 1993. Currently, he is the owner of Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic and CNSM Consulting. He is the author of The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It, as well as The Rested Child, Why Your Tired, Wired, or Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Disorder, and How to Help. In addition to working with numerous professional sports organizations to help their athletes optimize sleep, he is the host of the podcast Sleeping Around with Dr. Chris Winter, as well as a sleep.com series, Sleeping Around with Dr. Chris Winter. As an aside, really enjoyed this conversation. And I also highly suggest listening to Dr. Chris Winter's podcast. Really, really great content. He does a really fantastic job of helping to break down complex topics in the world of sleep and make them fun and bite-sized and understandable in a way that we can all really utilize in our day-to-day life, not just kind of lofty ideas, but a practical application. So I think you'll really enjoy that podcast as well as his books. Make sure you listen to those. I also really appreciate, I think I mentioned this on the podcast, that he reads his own books. So I really appreciate that he takes the time to read those books himself. And I think you'll really enjoy the content that he delivers day after day, both on the podcast as well as his social media. It's worth checking out. And my aim is that you get a lot of value out of today's conversation. So without further ado, let's jump in. So I get a lot of questions around sleep supplements, and I'm very hesitant to just throw out a whole laundry list of possibilities. One, I don't think it's the most responsible thing to do. I really do believe in testing to see what types of supplements make sense for you. And two, because I really truly believe that most of the things that you can do to improve your sleep are behavioral, psychological, environmental in nature, and often don't cost a dime. However, there is one supplement that I personally take every day and that I do feel quite comfortable with suggesting for most individuals to experiment with because of a couple of reasons. It's high safety profile and high rates of deficiencies in our modern society. Some put the numbers as somewhere around 80% of the population being deficient in this one area, and that is magnesium. So magnesium has been called the calming mineral, and some report that magnesium can increase GABA, which encourages relaxation on a cellular level, which is critical for sleep. Magnesium also plays a key role in regulating our body's stress response system. Those with magnesium deficiency usually have higher anxiety and stress levels, which negatively impact sleep as well. Now, before you go out and buy a magnesium supplement, it's important to understand that most magnesium products out there are either synthetic or they only have 1 to 2 forms of magnesium, when in reality, your body needs all 7 forms of this essential sleep mineral. So that's why I recommend a product from my friends over at BioOptimizers. They have created something called the Magnesium Breakthrough. And taking this magnesium before bed helps you relax and wake up refreshed and energized. And while we don't recommend that you go too nuts on looking at all the sleep stage classifications on all your wearables, we'll share anecdotally that many clients have reported improvements in their deep sleep trend numbers. Again, I don't want you going nuts on the sleep stage classification numbers on your wearables, but I do want to let you know about that because I know that many of you do reach out on questions of how to improve your deep sleep. So I also love that BioOptimizers offers free shipping on select orders, and they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee on all their products. Plus, they have a customer satisfaction rating of 99.3%. Very impressive. And you can get 10% off Magnesium Breakthrough. Again, this is the same magnesium that I use every single night. And finally, you can get 10% off Magnesium Breakthrough. Again, that's the magnesium supplement that I use every single night by going to magbreakthrough.com/sleepisaskill. And be sure to use the code sleepisaskill for 10% off. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. I am beyond grateful for my guest to be joining us today, Dr. Chris Winter. Before even we begin, yes, hello, if anyone's watching the video recording, you know, this is such an honor for me. I feel like I know this individual. I just was sharing with him because I've had his voice in my ears at different points when listening to his fantastic books, including The Sleep Solution, was one that I was just revisiting recently. And he has got, among other books as well, but he also has a very exciting and must listen to podcast, Sleep Unplugged. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here.
I appreciate that, Molly. That's more than generous and I'm not entirely sure accurate, but that was very nice.
Well, you know, a couple of things. One, I think it's noteworthy the fact, and we were discussing this beforehand, that you even chose to narrate your book, which I just think from a craftsmanship perspective is so cool because you could easily opt out of that kind of arduous task. And I just feel like it speaks to what I have gotten from you of a sense of commitment to excellence and commitment to really getting out really quality and clear and authentic and relatable and interesting information around sleep into the world.
Yeah, I mean, that was a personal endeavor, writing that book. I mean, I wrote it over a long period of time. It was never, I never really intended it to be a book. It was just sort of a collection of, you know, you get to a place in one's career, wherever you're at, where you're experienced enough to have some feelings or some original thoughts about something, but not 6 weeks from retirement. So at some point, I just thought, I want to put down some things that seem to work for patients or resonate with them and just kind of have a log of them. And maybe I'll print it out on a piece of paper and hand it to a patient one day. And it just grew. And it included a lot of personal things. And it just seems strange and disingenuous to have somebody else read it.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Stewart reading sleep, you know, just kind of, you know, that's kind of random, you know, sound great. And, you know, my voice, I think, is a little grating, but, you know, so when my agent said, you know, we got these voice actors and some of them are really good, I just asked, can I do it? And they're like, well, yeah, you can. It's a lot of work and you have to try out for it because if they don't like your voice, they're going to say no because they're paying for it. So I was fortunate enough to be chosen to read my own book. So I liked it. And, you know, I just felt like I wanted it read in a certain way. And, you know, anyway, it's just, it, like I said, personal stories in there, which I think are important to understand that I know something about sleep, but I can also be an idiot too at times. And so putting all that in there and where I, how I came to sleep and my journey, I think it's always important when you're talking about a sleep expert, unlike a shoulder surgeon, if somebody's operating my shoulder, I think I know what's going on with her. She went to college and then medical school and some surgical residency and she hasn't killed anybody yet, and so she's feeling pretty good about fixing my rotator cuff. But when you say sleep expert, I think it's fair for somebody to understand how one came to that and what they're bringing to the table, so to speak. So yeah, I really enjoyed reading the book. It's, I don't like listening to myself speak, but I did enjoy reading it.
Well, I enjoy listening to you speak. You've got lots of wisdom. And also to your point, I think it's so helpful that you do humanize this area and you're bringing some personal anecdotes and just making it really a fun topic to explore. So I think it's really, really important. And there are so many directions we could go today. So we're trying to kind of hone down because you've got such a wealth of information. And yet one thing that really stuck with me, it was, I felt like you've made a strong argument over the years on this distinction for people of the old saying, I can't sleep. I just can't sleep. I can't sleep. The kind of these are different verbiage around this belief that there is no sleep available to certain individuals at certain times or what have you. So I was hoping that you could help do your amazing work at helping us to understand why we need to think differently and really draw a line in the sand that we're not going to speak in that way any longer and why that's important.
Sure. So, I mean, I think it's really important because that kind of talking is doing two things. One, it's defeating somebody. I can't ride a bike or I can't swim. Well, I bet you can. You just maybe haven't learned it the right way or put enough time into it or something of that nature. But it also sort of creates a new reality, which is, and you see it reflected a lot in the media. My podcast will reach 100 people, you know, whatever the little tiny number of people who are going to listen to a sleep podcast is. But
by the way, it's brand new. So for anyone listening, please subscribe and follow this podcast. Really, really great information.
That's kind of you. So, but a New York Times article that says why people can't sleep is problematic.
Yeah.
We get little doses of that all the time, which is what's so nice about your podcast, which is sleep is a skill.
Aww.
You're basically saying it's something that you can do something about. And I say that all the time. Sleep's not a trait. I'm a bad sleeper. Well, what chromosome is bad sleep gene on? I'm not aware of that one. I've read a bit about sleep. So, but you know, when you believe yourself to be that, and that little self-talk is problematic, and it can become incredibly malignant and problematic over time, where it almost becomes that individual's identity. Oh, he's a great cook and she's an amazing athlete and yoga instructor. And I'm the person who can't sleep and nobody can figure it out and no pills work on me. And so we always want to be empowering about this, because the absence of sleep in a human is physiologically impossible. So when somebody comes to my clinic, and this is a daily occurrence, and says, well, you know, I'm Chris, what can I do for you? I can't sleep. What do you mean by that? Nine times out of 10, it's, well, I sleep. I just wake up a lot during the night. Because two sentences later, you're telling me on weekends, you're usually getting up around noon. Well, you can sleep. So why was the first comment that you couldn't sleep? Because you're often sleeping until noon and 1 o'clock on a Saturday and Sunday. So let's redefine that as, I'm not sleeping when I want to. I'm not sleeping how I want to. Or more commonly, I don't feel good during the day. Therefore, I clearly am not sleeping or not sleeping well. So there's a lot of things to unpack, because defining the problem properly is the key to fixing it. If we always stay in the box of somebody not being able to sleep, we get into a lot of trouble. Look at Michael Jackson. He couldn't sleep. I tried this pill. It didn't work. I mean, listen, docs, these pills you're giving me are not working, and I cannot sleep. I got a big tour coming up, and I got to rehabilitate my image and whatever else Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, was trying to accomplish in his life. I don't know. I don't know the guy.
Yeah.
All I know is that my field of MDs killed him because they started giving him propofol to help him sleep, which is insanity. I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
So, but that's all about a dialogue based on a false premise never getting corrected. So like I tell people all the time, you're coming to me because you can't sleep. You've got a problem. It's just not that you can't sleep. That's why episode 2 of the podcast was insomnia. It's not what you think it is.
Yeah.
Once people can get out from under the fact that it's not an inability to sleep, that, like I said, does not exist in nature, but it's something going on with your sleep that we're going to work on as a skill to make better, or figure out the pathology and make it go away. I mean, these are eminently treatable problems. That's what's so wonderful about sleep medicine. We can fix the problem, but you need a patient to kind of walk into it with an openness. And it can sometimes be difficult to convince people, hey, listen, I don't sleep. I don't care what you have to say. I don't care that the world record for sleep deprivation is 11 days, which was a sham. I've gone 6 months at a time without sleep. And if you don't want to listen to what I have to say, then screw you. Yes. You can edit that out later on. That happens. And so that becomes a very difficult situation to, you know, maybe a nutritionist would, you know, hey, I don't eat. Well, what do you mean when you say I don't eat? I haven't eaten in 7 years. Well, you're
unlikely.
17 pounds overweight. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's the case. So
how
do you work on somebody who that fundamental premise is so deeply flawed that we need to, you know, so I think that when we talk about can't sleep, can't sleep, can't sleep, it just perpetuates this idea that there are those among us. One of my favorite things was NPR did an article many years ago about why 60 million Americans can't sleep. And then a few months later, Forbes put an article that said why 70 million Americans can't sleep. And I remember thinking, if you're one of those people, you thought, oh my God, 10 more million Americans have been added to this, you know, zombie army. So anyway, so I think that creating real dialogues about sleep through podcasts and articles are so important, because people want help. But we've got to make sure that they're understanding that the help is going to look a certain way, not let's just bludgeon you with sleeping pills until you finally become unconscious. That's not what we're looking for here.
Yes. And I so appreciate you distinguishing that. And also, speaking of sleeping pills, just as an asterisk under that I can't sleep declaration. Often we'll see people that will have it that because they're taking certain sleeping pills, and this is our commitment here at Sleep as a Skill, is to help discuss sleep and how to look at optimization. But certainly we do not make any confusion around, we are absolutely very clear that anyone that is dealing with long time, say benzodiazepine use, hypnotics, et cetera, that we do not, you know, kind of work with that, and that we kind of create a referral system. So from that place, when people are coming and are saying, well, now I've been on fill in the blank for 10 years, 15 years. And so now fundamentally I've changed something, I've done something, and now I cannot sleep without those things. I know that this is a big topic, and so I'm not meaning to open up a can of worms, but
no.
I'm wondering if you could speak to that. If anyone says, well, this isn't for me, or if you can share what you suggest for people of what path to go to find a set of a team, even in some cases, to help them on this process if they are exploring tapering or what that would all
sure. be. Yeah, all those things are very important. And you know what you're seeing a lot reflected in the primary care community is that at long last, they're kind of figuring that out, that maybe Valium for the rest of this patient's life is not the best plan for their sleep.
Yes.
So a lot of doctors are starting to pull back, and it's creating a lot of stress and anxiety within the sleep patient population of, this doctor's been giving me this drug for 10 years. They created the Frankenstein that I've become. And now yes. they're telling me they don't want to write for the Klonopin anymore, or the Valium or the Sertraline yeah. or whatever. So I think it's important to understand that that's fine. That's the right thing to do. But we have to support people in terms of, you've created this situation. Now you need to get out from underneath it. Now we're happy to help with that. So the doctor says, look, I've been giving this person Klonopin for 10 years. I had no idea how bad it was and how detrimental it was to all kinds of things. Can yeah. you help us? Of course we can. And that's really what sleep specialists are for.
Yeah.
And that starts off with this idea that I've been on this medication for a decade. I can't sleep without it. Sure you can. That's not a true statement, meaning yeah. that if we took that that pill from you and put you in a lab and put some wires on your head and videotape, you would sleep. Now, your sleep might be very disrupted, very strange. It might take you, maybe anxiety that goes along with your sleep, with the Klonopin. There's all kinds of things go along with it. We yeah. just want to understand that you're not in danger of not sleeping. Mm-hmm. That's why it's really interesting sometimes if you can get a partner involved in the care, that his or her perspective of the situation, living with the patient, will tell you, you know, there's many breakfasts when he or she will wake up and say, I didn't sleep last night, but doctor, that's not exactly what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't want to diminish it. It's not about yeah. proving somebody's, you know, telling the truth or not. It's about, hey, listen, your perception is that you sit in bed for 8 hours at night, not sleeping. That's rough. That's terrible. Mm. So it's not about proving, aha, look, this videotape shows that you did sleep, which we see all the time. The first question I always ask a patient after a sleep study is, what happened? How was your night? What happened? Oh my God, Dr. Winter, how can anybody sleep with wires all over their head? And you look at the video, and I'll show patients, you slept a ton. Mm. Really? Oh my God. Like, I mean, I had a judge, a circuit court judge, watching her own video of her sleeping saying, Chris, this is, she said to me, I'll never forget. She said, I feel like somebody has taken the footage and you've put my face on somebody else's body, because this is not at all what I remember happening during the night. My opinion was I wow. slept maybe 30 minutes. She slept like, I don't know, 5-6 hours.
Wow.
So this is a powerful, yeah. powerful sort of thing. So I think the short answer to your question is, if you're in that situation just described, get professional help. This is not something, it's like, you've torn your rotator cuff. You're not going to figure this out with some stuff you buy at CVS. You need a orthopedic surgeon to team up with her and let her figure out a way to repair your shoulder so it's functional again. I think if you're in that situation with your sleep, go see a sleep specialist who specializes in insomnia and getting you off of these sort of malignant treatments and on a pathway to feeling a whole lot better. I mean, it sounds like you've come out the other end of a very difficult situation. Mm. There's people who've written books about it. I mean, you're not alone.
Yeah,
because the average doctor that's treating your insomnia has no idea what he or she is doing. Because they were never trained. It's like me yeah. trying to deliver your baby. Ooh, that is right. not going to be a pretty scene. I know some vague, I know where it's coming out of. I'm pretty good at that. But outside of that, I really don't know. Unless it's a perfect delivery, I'm going to be very little use of to you. I'll encourage you. Push.
Yes.
Good job. Moral support. Yay. You're doing great. But do you, I don't know what I'm doing.
No, I completely get that. And it's so important. Do you often create a situation or recommendations for people to work with certain types of psychiatrists in the process too? Or do Absolutely. You have resources that you send people
100%.
To? 100%. We'll hear different people say, oh, well, the psychiatrist is the one that got me on these or X, Y, you know, lots of narratives, yeah. right? So I'm wondering if you have any resources, because I would love to see kind of akin to what we see for functional medicine aggregates, you know, sites that you can go to kind of search to find certified people in the area, if there's something that you recommend for people to find holistic psychiatrists or people that are in this conversation to help that weaning and tapering process.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And, you know, in yeah. our community here, and I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia, so in the middle of the state, you know, the University of Virginia, there's a sure. wealth of, I mean, I think good mental health resources are scarce these days. So if you're yes. having trouble finding that person, you are not alone. Yeah. Ever since COVID, it's just been an explosion of need, but not an explosion of, you know, of resources. Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that's been nice about being in this community for a long period of time is the partnerships you start to develop in both directions. Hey, I've got this person been treating for depression for a very long time. I wonder if they might have narcolepsy, Chris. Like, they're just so tired, so sleepy all the time. And so, and then vice versa. Hey, I've got this person who's was put on their, you know, little country primary care doctor 20 years ago on Valium, and we're trying to get them off. And yeah. I think there's degrees of anxiety that go along with not only their sleep, but just generalized anxiety disorder. So we're trying to get a hold of that. And, you know, also just, you know, psychiatrists and professionals who are a little bit more versed in cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be hooked on sleeping pills for 10 years and not have some emotional baggage that goes along with their sleep. Like I said, the second episode of our podcast we did was Insomnia, It's Not What You Think It Is. That our upcoming episode is really about what it can be is trauma, traumatization. I mean, it is, yeah. a lot of people sort of liken it to almost a PTSD.
Yeah.
So as this thing becomes more and more malignant, your approach to the bed is very different from the non-insomnia approach. I mean, it's sort of like, I think about going to bed, like I think about brushing my teeth. It's just nothing. There's nothing there. Now,
yeah.
I get nervous if somebody says, Chris, step into this basketball game for us. Like, I'm not a very good basketball player. I'm kind of conscientious of it. It would make me very nervous to be in front of a lot of people, like dribbling a basketball. That's why I wrestled in high school, because I was like, I'm terrible at basketball. So people are triggered by different things. And for some people with insomnia, the idea of sleep, the idea of going to bed, the idea is just awful to them.
Yeah.
And that takes time to develop. And we have to make sure we're providing people with resources that, yeah, I can sit here and tell you everybody sleeps. I did an academic lecture one time on insomnia. And I based it on reviews of my first book. And you can look at them on Amazon. And you can even do the little thing where I want to see just the 5-star reviews. Or you can say, I just want to see the 1-star reviews of Chris's book.
Yeah.
And you can just feel the trauma when you read those. This book is terrible. Don't waste your time. If I could give it 0 stars, I would. He has no idea the hellscape that my life has become, not being able to sleep. And he says not being able to sleep is no big deal. And he makes fun of it. I mean, you can just feel the unbelievable angst that this person is feeling, versus the next review is like, this has changed my life. So what is the difference between those two people? My guess is it's level of trauma is one of the things. You know, some people, you know, if you look at an EMT, they may see a horrific accident and they go in there and help the people in this car wreck and they just walk away from it. Other people, it's been 6 months since the car wreck that I witnessed and I cannot get these images out of my head. I'm literally traumatized by it, even though I wasn't part of the accident. I just witnessed it. I was adjacent to the trauma, you know, so it's a very interesting situation. And I think that your point of having resources around you to deal with all these other aspects is important. And it starts with the patient's openness. You know, when I mentioned, have you struggled with anxiety? Do you think you might be anxious? If the person is like, well, yeah, maybe I am. I think I've thought about that a lot. That's probably a good indicator that they're going to get out from underneath this very quickly. If it's, oh, don't try to paint me as being depressed. This is not a mental problem. This is a fact that I cannot sleep. And so if you can't deal with that, I'm not telling you that you're crazy.
Right.
Listen, I'm anxious as they come, man. I'm anxious little all over the place. And everybody in medical school is too. You know, type A makes the world go round until it becomes a problem. So we're just kind of exploring the different characteristics and personality things that you bring that might be strengths, but also might be weaknesses, and trying to give you support for those things.
So great. Well, thank you for drawing that distinction and just the importance of contacting professionals in the space when you are dealing with something to this level, or not even to this level, if it's it's problem repeatedly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So life-changing to reach out to someone like yourself. So one, addressing that, thank you so much for helping us to really unpack that, because we can't begin on making any changes if we don't believe that we can even make a difference, or there's no level of self-efficacy.
Sleep is the skill. That's right.
Yes, 100%. And sure. I also know that you've got a lineup today where you're speaking with big sports groups and associations and what have you. So I wanted to check in with you on the idea of the fact that you've been well-versed in dealing with lots of different individuals, including athletes, including elite athletes in their field, and what we can learn about these groups, whether we're athletes or not, but why that might be an interesting kind of area to study and what we can extract from that.
Yeah, no, I mean, so I've worked with athletes for over a decade.
Yeah.
I probably worked with 30 professional sports organizations or specific athletes. Today, I'd set up Zoom meetings with about 4 Major League Baseball players from a certain team. And what I like about, I'm not a huge sports fan. Like, I don't watch a lot of sports, but I love the idea of two things. Number one, if I can get Tom Brady or LeBron James or Kevin Durant to tweet something about how important sleep is to him or her, they're going to do my job for me, because nobody cares. Dr. Winter said sleep's important, so my God, we got to do it. Nobody cares about that. There's not a 13-year-old who's like practicing their free throws in, you know, St. Louis right now who would hear Dr. Winter said sleep's important, care. But if LeBron James says it, you know, and he's sitting there practicing for the LeBron James socks on, like, of course it's going to resonate with him. And what I love when I get a chance to talk to young athletes who want to get to that level, what can you really control? You can practice, you can eat well, you can kind of take care of mindfulness and sleep. That's it. Otherwise, my dad was an ex-football player, as you can probably tell. I'm kidding. But he used to always look at me. I'm small, I'm like 5'8". And he said, you can't coach big. So what he meant by that was, you can practice and do all these things, but I can't coach you to be a 6'5", you know, linebacker kind of person, which is crazy because my sons are 6'4 and 6'3 and my daughter's tall. And so I don't know what happened there along the line, but anyway, didn't quite get the gene for the height, but you know, so important to kind of create this expectation that sleep is something that we can't optimize. And for an athlete, it's extremely important. What's great about athletics is once we've optimized it or done something, we can measure an outcome. Versus if you're a bunch of school teachers, or I had the chance to talk to all the national meeting of all the school nurses. Well, we could do things to optimize their sleep, but how do we know if it's working? What is that? You know, there's no such thing as like a school nurse baseball card kind of thing. What is this? This is my favorite rookie card of this school nurse in you know, Idaho that I've been a fan of hers ever since she started working as a school nurse. And she had a great season last year. You know, she was killing it with the asthma attacks and small cuts and abrasions of the kids in her elementary school. You know, there is no so it's basically, I feel better, I don't feel better. But with athletes, we can go further.
Yeah.
And really sort of kind of check ourselves. Like, I've been telling athletes to do X, and that doesn't seem to work as well as when we tell them to do Y. Well, there you go. It's kind of like battlefield medicine. You kind of figure out the things that really work and move the needle and the things that don't. And there's tons of anxiety. Everything's just heightened with them, you know, it's just, but they're no different than you or me. They just make a lot of money and don't have a lot of time to talk to you. They want a lot, but have no time to, you know, tell me what to do, but can you do it for me kind of thing. So God bless them.
Absolutely. Completely hear that. Well, one, I love that you have this background of also bringing in this high performance piece. And real quick, when it comes to technology, because often athletics is kind of space or looking at what's the latest and greatest. So one, I'm wondering if you have any call outs that you want to make or any ways of thinking about some of the technology that's on the market at the moment. And then I have a second question in regards to technology, because in your book, you had kind of drawn parallels about when it makes sense to have an at-home sleep test versus actually go into a clinic and have an in-person home test done. So from that technology umbrella, I know I'm asking you a bunch of questions, but yeah, just any insights there or anything to think about there?
So first and foremost, I like technology. I think the technology explosion is really interesting in terms of back when I was a undergraduate student doing sleep research in the early 90s, you know, we had the little Philips ActiWatch, which was an actigraphy device that measured movement as a surrogate for sleep. It had a little watch face painted on it at 3 o'clock, which I always thought was funny. So if you wore it in public, people wouldn't, you know, what are you wearing on your wrist there? You know, like it's always 3 o'clock in your life. Yeah. So it was actually, you know, ways we could. So we've been looking at actigraphy for many, many, many years. Yeah. But the addition of the heart rate variability and the pulse ox and the body temperature and the sweating and whatever else that there, it's just incredible. So what you really see is this movement of the gold standard we have. And it's a great monitoring system, but it's not a polysomnograph. I think that the differences between what we do in an in-lab study and what you might be wearing on your wrist or your forehead when you sleep at night is rapidly converging. You can hear the desperation in sleep doctors like, but our $3,000 test that we do and charge your insurance is much better. Well, yeah, I'm sure it is, but for how long? So I think they're wrestling with this idea that you own a 20-bed sleep center. How much longer? I mean, I do think that I will live to see the day where we're sitting around and I'm fat and bald drinking something with some friends. You're like, man, remember when we used to bring people in and do sleep studies that were $3,000? Now everything is, I mean, even just up to this point, I was showing a slide of me running a sleep study when I was at Emory. So I used to run sleep studies at night and then go to medical school during the day, which was brutal and probably took off my life. But thanks. But you look at it was this massive computer and this massive pen and ink and amplifiers and all this stuff. And now all that technology fits in something you can wear on your wrist practically. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So I'm a big fan. It's not perfect.
Right.
But when you look at a sleep study, it's not perfect either, meaning that the sleep study looked at your sleep one random Tuesday night. This thing on your watch has been looking at your sleep for 6 months now, every night. So you may not get that sort of depth of quality, but you're getting this breadth of information that is equally important in a lot of ways, maybe more so. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to embrace it, always be looking at ways where we can make it better, making sure people understand that they might be good at doing this one thing, measuring how much you actually slept. They may not be great at differentiating deep sleep from light sleep if you're only looking at actigraphy. So I think as long as people understand that, it's important. When you look at home sleep testing versus in-lab sleep testing, I don't really call it a home sleep test. It's really more like a home sleep apnea test in most cases. Sure. So if somebody says, look, I'm kind of overweight, snore loudly, my partner says I stop breathing at night, I'm a little bit worried about that, a home test is wonderful for that. It's convenient, it's cheap. And an in-lab study could always be done afterwards if somebody really didn't feel like they got the information that they needed. But if you're really looking at trying to understand somebody's sleep at a deeper level, what is their deep sleep looking like? Are there things that are impairing their ability to get good sleep? The in-lab study is still the best thing for that. So I always think about the home sleep testing or the home apnea testing as, let's chop off all the people that you know after talking to them for 20 minutes, they've got terrible sleep apnea. Yeah. I mean, 100%. It's almost just like let's just do this to confirm it, make sure we're thinking about things in the right space, and then we'll move forward with treating it. And if somebody's still having difficulties, then they could do the in-lab study. So it's just a nice thing. We used to do 2 sleep studies for everybody. You'd come in, you do your sleep study, and it would show, hey, you got sleep apnea, which we already knew you had it because your partner recorded you sleeping at night. Like, oh my God, you went 30 seconds without breathing or whatever you just did. And then we would put you back in to put a CPAP on you and figure out how to titrate that. Well, now you can do a home study and the CPAP titrates itself. So you could literally get tested and treated for sleep apnea and never step foot in a sleep lab anymore. Mm. Which more wild. People should know because they're scared. They don't want to do that. So if I can tell you, look, you don't even have to go in our lab. You can just do it all at home. That's huge. And getting more and more people treated is really what we want to do. But there is still definitely a place for that in-lab study for more specific information about somebody's sleep.
Absolutely. So one, thank you for helping to distinguish all that. And two, I cannot wait for this next piece that we ask every person that comes on the podcast a little bit about how they are individually managing their sleep. So can't wait to learn from you. And the first question that we ask everyone is, what is your nightly sleep routine looking like? And I'm sure you travel and you do all kinds of things that might disrupt that or make it look a little different. But what might we learn from that?
nightly sleep routine when I'm home is generally a relatively early dinner. And then I usually work out right after my clinic as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
Usually some degree of weight training. And then I run about 2 miles every day with my dogs. And they're wonderful. I encourage you, if you're struggling to exercise, get a pet that likes to exercise, because they're just sort of they don't care if it's sleeting.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, well, when are we going to run in the sleep? We don't care. So that's very encouraging. There's many days I would not exercise, were not for them. In the evening, I cut my caffeine off usually by 9 o'clock. It should be earlier. I'm all about honesty. At 9 o'clock, if I'm thinking, oh, I'd love a little espresso or something, I don't do it if it's after nine.
Yeah.
A little television or reading. Right now we're watching Game of Thrones because you just went to Croatia and I wanted to rewatch it before I went there.
I used to live in Croatia. That was actually where I had.
Where?
So I was in Split.
And, oh God, yeah, it was amazing.
When I say live, I was there for about like a month and change. So it wasn't like a long time.
That's living.
Yeah, amazing.
I would love to live for a month in Split. Or we were in Split in Dubrovnik and they were just lovely, relaxed.
Beautiful, right?
If you want that kind of Venetian experience, great food, wonderful people, but you don't want the hordes of the tour groups with the little flags everywhere. And it was just, yeah, it was great.
Beautiful.
So anyway, watch a little bit of Game of Thrones and then dim lights after dinner. I've got a little book that I like to read and then a little device that cools my bed and out cold. And then what I've really been trying to work on is when I'm traveling, I sometimes walk into the empty hotel room and it's like, oh, I could get all kinds of stuff done right now because I don't have to worry about dishes or my wife wanting to go to bed. Like it's just, I've been really trying to be like, yep, but I'm still going to try to hit the hay at 11 o'clock, especially if I have an early flight.
So good. I know you mentioned the cooling device. I think you and I both are fans of chilly sleep. Is that right?
Big time. Okay. Yeah. And I'm not, just to be clear, no paid endorsement there. I just think it's the number of people who've tried something like that and have said, well, it just didn't work for me is I think zero.
I know.
Yeah, there might be people who describe, well, I had some technical issues with it. I've always found that their return policy was great. I mean, the new one is so quiet. So actually, my little pro tip is I just leave mine running 24 hours a day because I would always get frustrated if I forgot to turn it on. So I just leave it running. It runs on the electricity of about half a light bulb. So it's not a big. And so I just love that getting into bed and it's freezing cold. I love it. And then my wife can be however cool or hot she wants to be on her side. We keep those sort of independent. So I'm a big fan of it.
Big fan too. Well, chilly sleep, if you're listening.
That's right.
Better sponsor, Dr. Chris Winters. Yeah, really. 100%. I mean, one of the things I really appreciate about them too is that they do have tiered. I think a lot of people don't realize that there are tiered offerings too, and they have refurbished models. So if you are struggling, you know, because we do want to be responsible about the fact that from this optimization of sleep perspective, it can get pricey on all of these different things.
Absolutely. And mattresses and all kinds of, you bet.
It adds up. So I really like that I came from no money, middle of nowhere, Maine. And so to be able to, at any price point, hopefully it's still going to be a little bit of investment, you can get some refurbished options or other things that you might be able to fit into your budget.
Yeah. So, and I think that, you know, I always tell people set the bar high. I mean, if you've been using it for a month and you're like, I don't know if it's really helping me much at all, I would say send it back.
Yeah.
You know, just, this is, you don't have to, you're not stuck with it. I mean, but again, if you're asking me how many people have sent theirs back because it didn't make them sleep better, it's very, very low.
Same
and
for
women
me.
With menopausal kind of situations, hot flashes, it can be an absolute game changer for them.
Yes.
So anyway, I think it's an easy thing to explore. But they can be pricey.
Okay. Yes. So great nightly routine. And what would we see for your morning routine? We're making this argument that can help impact your sleep.
Is irritability part of a morning routine? I would say
so
irritability.
Not a sunny morning disposition.
Yeah, it's funny. In one of my presentations, I talk about temperature and I've got a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio from The Revenant, like wearing this bear skin in the middle of like a snowstorm. And I make the joke that this is what my wife looks like at night because she's a real morning person. Her body temperature drops early. So we're sitting there watching Jimmy Kimmel. I'm in my underwear and dress socks, which is a lovely look. And she's like freezing because her body temperature's dropped. Mine's still up. Now, she said, I don't mind if you make that joke in your presentations, but you've got to paint the picture of what you look like in the morning.
Her body temperature
comes up early. Mine hasn't quite started coming up when we get up. And she says, you look like a bunny rabbit. You walk around like a wounded bunny rabbit with your hands like this and talking because you're so cold because your body temperature. So I try to get warm very quickly. In fact, I love the new Doc Pro because I can set my temperature to rise in that 30 minutes before I get up, which is a game changer. Oatmeal, overnight oats is sort of my go-to morning. Make my own latte with my little Breville device, which I love that thing. If there's a fire, it's the first thing coming out of the house.
Which one is that? Because actually we just moved off and we have to buy one.
The Mini Espresso Pro or something like that. Or
okay, I'm writing that down.
It's, you know, you grind size and shot amounts and all the chemistry. It's so much fun. Yeah. Mini Barista Pro or something like that.
Ooh, cool. Okay, yeah. Great.
Anyway, thanks. I'll send it to you what it is, guys.
Oh, thanks.
Anyway, my shot for the Breville endorsement. I can't get the name yes. right.
We're going to give you all kinds of sponsorship.
That's right. Now, I need, but it's important, you know, as a doctor, I'm trying to, you know, Achilles Sleep and we've communicated because I work with them a lot, but I'll try to stay away from. So I want an endorsement that's something that nothing to do with sleep, like Toyota. There we go. Like that. So if Toyota, I would say yes, because I try to stay away from sleep. So when I say I like chili, it's not always getting paid by chili. But anyway.
No, 100%.
And then I go right to breakfast, try to get some sunlight. I usually go out my garden. I've got a big garden on my deck and clip dill and herbs and get my basil. And then first patient at 9 a.m.
Wow. Well, I love the clipping of fresh herbs. You're the first person to say that on this podcast. Very cool.
I love, And then I keep my bird feeder and herbs. And those are two things like that. My wife is like, you just go out there and just like clip around. And in fact, for Father's Day, I got this really cool herb plastic, like herb basket.
Ooh.
So you go out and clip things, all these little compartments. You can put your dill in here, your waist in here, your clippers right there. And yeah, I found that too. Really, it's like a bonsai tree.
What a cool gift. I love that. Yeah. Amazing. And I love that because that's often, you know, people will sometimes struggle to make this morning routine work where they're getting that morning sun. So activities that you can do during that, that's a new one.
And you can grow your own chamomile if you're interested in that. So you go out there and trim up your chamomile, hang it up to dry. And then
that is like a sleep Jedi right there.
So you got your mint on top of your yogurt in the morning for kind of wake you up a little bit. Your chamomile growing right beside it to settle you down at night.
That is amazing. Okay, I love that. And then what might we see on your nightstand or maybe proverbial nightstand if you're traveling, you know, gadgets, gizmos, apps, anything to be aware of?
Lavender spray just stays in my bag. And so I spray it at night at home. And when I get to the, you know, whatever, JW, whatever Marriott situation, I spray it on that pillow. So it kind of, some people think lavender helps with your sleep. There's some studies that show that it might improve it a little bit, but also just like the idea of it's such an unusual smell that when I smell it, it reminds me like I'm sleeping at home. And we, as a neurologist, we tie smell most strongly to memory. So it's a nice little routine of, so it's the same bottle on my bedside table as in my Dopper kit. So that happens. I get some Z's tea. I usually like to have like a little bit of tea or like I said, an espresso, but when I'm traveling, I always try to keep it. So there's always a hot water thing in the room so I can make some hot water and make some herbal tea or every now and then bring my own little sachet of chamomile that I've grown or something like that, just to kind of keep that little wind down routine of a little bit of tea, you know, do some work on my computer, watch a TV show, and then try to shut it all down by 11. When I travel with my family, I keep this little, it's made by Yoga Sleep, but it's the Roam noise machine, just because I hate using my phone as a noise machine. I want my phone away from my bed. And also I'm always nervous that if it's all night long, it's going to run the battery down or something and won't be able to hear my alarm or something. Yep. So definite essential. And then I always try to bring a book. I've been on a kick of reading classic books. I think I'm looking towards my death now and thinking, I've never read Catcher in the Rye. Like I can't die before I read J.D. Salinger's masterpiece. So I've read Catcher in the Rye, Heart of Darkness. God, what's the other one? Reading Catch 22 and Clockwork Orange, all in this year. And I'm not a huge non-science reader. So I'm really excited about that. Although I keep waiting for it to come up in conversation.
That's Joseph amazing.
Conrad's Heart of Darkness reminds me of that. I agree.
I've been waiting to fit this into conversation for months.
The River Captain is a Christ-like figure. You know, I'm all ready for that conversation. It just hasn't quite happened yet.
That is amazing. I love the contemplating your mortality. There's a great app that I love called We Croak, and the whole premise is supposed to be that five times a day it reminds you you're going to die, which can sound so morbid, but it's supposed to actually be coming from this thinking that in Bhutan, there's this concept where monks would then contemplate their death five times a day on purpose to then actually be more grateful for the time that they had. Right. And
we talked about that with sleep too, like in the sense that you know, one of the things people say, I'm nervous to go to sleep because I had this terrible thing happen to me and I always think about it, you know, when I go to bed. I don't think about it during the day, but when I get in bed at night and it's quiet, I think about the assault or I think about the divorce or whatever. But if you can get somebody to actually intentionally run towards those thoughts during the day, your brain kind of tires of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? In a weird way. So it's kind of a way. So I like that idea that, you just think about it. And just that whole idea of gratefulness and you know, your brain's always struggling to put things in boxes. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. I love that one. And there was a great moment for me when I had to give a presentation and I was like overthinking it and stressing out about it, whatever. And then that reminder popped up for me and it was kind of like, oh, it puts everything into perspective. Like, wait a minute, I'm going to die. Like, this is not the biggest deal.
The fact that the person canceled my haircut, it's not the biggest thing in the world.
It kind of brings you back to reality. Yeah,
the flight will get rescheduled. I wonder if people in Bataan say to their friends and family, you know, Southern Baptist ministers in Georgia will often say, like, I wonder if that's the thing.
Because it sounds so much more lofty when it's in Bhutan.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. Oh my goodness. Anyway, so one, great call outs, great principles. And then I am really excited to hear your answer to this question, which is, what in all of the course of your life up to this moment, what has made the biggest change to your sleep game, or maybe the biggest aha moment in managing your sleep?
You know, it was probably medical school residency fellowship in a sense that I was always a good sleeper, and I think I would have been otherwise. But one of the things that you hear people tell you is that, oh my God, I went to bed last night, slept for 3 hours, woke up, I was up for an hour or two, then I went back to sleep and I was dysfunctional the next day. And what some of those situations teach you, they're not healthy. We shouldn't be putting people through boot camps and law clerking 12 hours. And all these, my daughter's dating a guy who's kind of in business finance, and some of their hours and expectations are really kind of criminal.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happens when you pop out the other side is, oh, well, I'm functional if I get 3 hours. It may kill me early, but I can take your spleen out if I get 3 hours of sleep. It's not a big deal. Like, you know, so it kind of sort of formulates this idea that I want to do my best with sleep. I want to do my best with nutrition. But if I eat half my turkey and half my green beans and don't even touch my mashed potatoes, I'm not going to be dysfunctional tomorrow. I may not be quite at my best, but I think some of those experiences teach you. Like, if you talk to special forces people, they don't have insomnia. It's just kind of like, oh, as long as I get 4 hours, I'm fine. Well, you're not. That's a different topic. But I'm glad you feel so confident about the fact that you can do the mission. If you, and people say it all the time in my clinic, I'm just, oh God, the last 2 years, I'm so dysfunctional. Well, you got up, you got dressed, you look great. You operated a car, you navigated your Google Maps and got to my office. You operate, you know, that's a far cry from dysfunctional. So again, that self-talk of, I don't feel my best, is different from I'm dysfunctional. I don't think that my life expectancy will be as good as if I, that's different than I'm not. So I think those things kind of taught you that, oh, you can do it if you're, I mean, we all pull all-nighters. We pulled all-nighters like crazy in medical school and residency, and the call schedules we had now are legal, back then are legal now, but we did it and hopefully didn't hurt anybody. But, you know, the idea that you're not functional if you get 5 hours versus seven is probably something we want to explore in our minds a little bit. So I think that taught me a lot.
Oh, that's such a great one. And I'm glad, I feel like we're almost kind of bookending with this topic of that inner talk and how important that is to navigating this, because we so often, you can speak to this to huge proportions of the number of people that seem to go into this perfectionist tendencies with sleep. And certainly I'm making a stand for sleep optimization, and we can often be a very fine line between neuroticism and obsessiveness.
And sometimes those traits are awesome. If you're my neurosurgeon, if you're my financial planner, if you're my mechanic, I kind of want you to be a little bit neurotic and type A and, oh, we'll click the vessel. We'll do something with that tumor. I don't know, Chris. Like, I don't want that. I want this is what's going to happen. We're going to be perfect about it and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's sometimes hard to turn those tendencies off. So a lot of people that we see in our clinic are very successful, driven, high achieving people, to be able to say, okay, but when you go to bed, I need you to be like the lazy guy that doesn't do anything besides watch TV and eat Cheetos on the couch. Like, that's a hard transition to make. And doing it is to some degree a skill. Boom.
Yeah. Well, that was a fantastic way to wrap that up, because one, you just provided so much amazing information. I know people are going to want to know, how can they learn more about you, follow you, read, listen to you? Highly recommend getting his books on Audible.
If you've not had enough, if you need more,
if you need more,
here's where you get more. So the podcast is Sleep Unplugged. It's new, but we're having a lot of fun with it. New episodes every Monday. You can find it anywhere sleep podcasts or podcasts are provided. Books are The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep's Broken, How to Fix It, and The Rested Child, Why You're Tired, Wired, Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Disorder, and How to Help. Terribly long titles, but those are the titles of the book. They're available Amazon, Kindle, Audible. If you need that narration, it's there for you, baby. By Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, do not follow me on TikTok. I was putting it out there. You're going to be sorely disappointed because I don't dance, but they're all Dr. Chris Winter. So you can follow me on there. I try to put information about sleep on there. And then if we refer to a study or a diagram or something on the podcast, we'll try to put a picture, you know, all those references. I was talking about this memory test that used alien pictures. And so we put the aliens on that. So you can find some little extras on there if you want to look. So appreciate the follow, and you can DM me on there anytime.
Awesome. And we'll include all that in the show notes. So be sure to make sure you're following, get his books, really get in this conversation, because he really does make it fun and interesting and relevant, but really life-changing. So thank you so much for the work you do.
Thank
really
you, Molly,
it.
For having me on here. And all the Absolutely. Work you do too. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.